Hello.
Daryl Sweat on the line. We've got Zach Show Live on the line. We've got Marine Kyology on the line.
How are y'all doing tonight? Marine Kyology. What's up?
How you doing, Kyle? Doing good. Glad to hear your voice. Glad to have Daryl here. Welcome back to the show, Daryl.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Kyle doesn't know Daryl Sweat. Kyle, Daryl Sweat is a really big influencer. He's like almost so big that you don't really even notice that he's there. Like it's almost like dark matter.
Nice. Kind of like, what is that other shit, Ryan? What is the other matter?
What?
The blue stuff.
I don't know. Neutrinos?
No.
Plasma?
No. Freaking Amanda's license plate.
Yeah. Mad Matter? Okay, that's a real inside joke. Sorry, guys.
Just, you're going to have to Google that one, guys. So,
welcome back to Science Friday. Do you want to say something,
Daryl? No, sorry. I'm adjusting my headphones.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Let's get in.
Welcome back to Science
Let's
Friday.
Let's get into the theme song.
It's been... Oh, yeah. Bill. Science Thursday. What was your theme song?
Mine?
Wasn't it? Yeah.
I don't know. We just kind of just made a lot of sounds, but we can't
do
it today.
Can I sort of come in like this? Like, can I sort of come in with these relaxing whale sounds?
You can definitely do that.
It feels like a great way to start off a science expedition.
Yeah.
So thanks for the listeners for showing up one, the third week of Science Thursday. It's really great to have you back here. I've scoured the science journals to find the best stories of the week. There's a lot. Again, I got way too
This
many.
Is a big news week for science?
Every week's a big news week for science. Like, they crank it out. Like, you don't really realize it, but science is happening all the time.
Are you telling me there's people out there who are just doing science, like, all the time?
Yeah, and they're, like, coming out with stuff that I'm like, why are you even publishing that? They're like they'll have, like, a really incremental thing that'll be like, oh, we studied... I mean, turns out the wings of this one fly are this many millimeters when we thought it was this many, and that's it. Time, it's like really lame stuff most of the time. So I'm really,
like,
filtering out.
It turns out the one person that measured that was kind of off that day. So sorry.
What does this mean for flies? Well, not much. Okay,
counts
bye.
As science
that's
though.
Like,
it just
really
says
literally
that paper counts as science.
Yeah, I mean, it is science. They're doing science. It turns out to be boring science, but they're out there doing it. We're bringing some science to the table today.
Did I bring something to the table?
You were researching reptile man.
I mean, I looked through a couple articles and I saw like a couple things on reptiles, and I was like, whoa, like this is just breaking news from today. I'm like, yeah, like you're saying, like science is, it's always happening, and you don't think that, but it is.
What reptile news was out there?
just I mean, I found this, but so I don't know how
reliable
it is.
Oh, okay.
It's super like surface. It's just a 240-million-year-old mother of lizards found. So the lizard was thought to be 75 million years older than the. Okay, hold on. Let me read this. Move over, Godzilla. There's a new mother of all lizards in town, known as Megachirella watchtrelli. This ancient lizard is the direct ancestor of 10,000 current species of reptiles, including lizards and snakes. The lizard is also thought to be 75 million years older than the earliest known squamates, and responsible for bridging the gap between the oldest known lizards and the origins of the group.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I don't know. It was just like, wow. Like, I don't know. It was weird that it was today. I'm like, am I just lucky? Or is this just
no? The thing is like, that's the thing I started realizing when I started looking at these is there's like groundbreaking science happening every day, because most of the science I'm going to tell you about is like from the last 2 days. Because I only just looked at, I scrolled through my feeds, and it took me, I was looking through my feeds for about 3 hours, mm-hmm. and I still only got like 2 days back.
Damn.
Yeah, there's a lot of science.
So wait, so this lizard, so this was like supposed to be 75 million years old, but then it was older?
I think they said it's 75 million years older than the oldest one we thought there was, exactly. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, they had this. Basically, they had this, they found this in the Alps in 2003, and then they recently did, like, another scan, and they're like, oh, wait, this is way older, like, so, yeah, I don't know, and, yeah.
That's pretty nuts.
Yeah, it is crazy. This is, like, literally, like, the only one I kind of looked at, and then I was just, like, there was just a lot of stuff on reptiles, like, I don't know if this is like catered towards me.
Does like, do you think Google's algorithm thinks you like
reptiles? You're about the cold-blooded ones?
Cold-blooded boy. I mean, they're right. I do find that stuff very interesting. So
yeah, I found a lot
cool.
too this week, Ryan.
You found some science this week?
I found one thing. Remember like I was telling you a while ago about it, and then you were like, yeah, look it up, check it out. And
yeah.
And I finally looked back at it. I mean, it's pretty crazy. Okay. Do you want me to say it now?
This is Kyle's premiere. Well, that was Zach's premiere article. This is Kyle's premiere article on Science Thursday. Everyone, round of applause.
I mean, can we... so I just want to say before you go, Kyle. Like, I've never had this many people on an anchor call. So
yeah, it is pretty weird.
Crazy. Yeah,
it is weird. But an ancient virus may be responsible for human consciousness.
I think I. When did we talk about this?
You talked about this a little bit ago, but I never really knew what it was. I never knew, like, why. I guess. Like,
what's the theory?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay, so pretty much like ancient viruses are at the root of like every like conscious thought you've ever had. That's pretty much like the big thing. They're like,
hell yeah, I'm down, dude. Take me on this journey.
So there were like two papers published in the journal like Cell. I don't know. It's like some like famous journal.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah.
And pretty much there's like a genetic code for like all four-limbed animals. And they found that like between 40% and 80% of the human genome arrived from some like archaic viral invasion.
Hmm.
So what they were saying was like consciousness pretty much was derived because of viral infections and like viruses in general that came into your body that pretty much sparked you to become who you are.
How long ago did the viruses get involved?
I mean, like the beginning of time.
So okay, so really, they're a catalyst for everything, not just consciousness. Consciousness just under the umbrella of the things that happened after the virus is invaded.
I'm just going to start using that as an excuse for anything. I'm sorry. That's my that's my DNA virus.
Well, it's a certain gene though. Like there's a certain gene that we have, I guess. It's like the ARC gene.
Man, what if I don't have the ARC gene? Like what if I get genetically tested and I like don't have the ARC gene?
Wow. I think everybody has it.
I think, yeah, you have to, pretty much to be human, I think you've got to have it.
Okay. But
the ARC gene in general, like, it allows for, I don't actually don't know, dude. This is really, really complicated.
Okay, look, that was your first swing.
It was hard. It was a hard article to understand, for one.
Usually when I have an article I don't understand, I don't even present it to you guys.
Yeah, that was... I just want to apologize for both mine and Kyle's. we were not ready for that, obviously. Let's get into the real heat of it now.
I mean, I'll do my best.
I kind of just liked what it was about, really. I liked the idea of a virus starting human consciousness. I thought that was
kind of... Like, I mean, that's... Listen, if it's like the way you worded it the first time made me sort of think that it was responsible for like specifically four-legged, like animals. And I just want to give a shout out to this virus because I do like having four limbs. It is pretty. It's pretty sick.
It's useful. Yeah, it's come in handy once or twice. I will say that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know many animals that don't have at least four limbs. So I wish I could have had more.
I'm just saying respect. Respect. I appreciate it.
I think if I could have had consciousness or more than four limbs, I might pick more than four limbs.
I mean, sometimes I think I have five limbs because my dick's so big.
Yeah. All right. I'm trying to segue. Speaking of limbs, there's a new scientists in Tokyo used rat muscles to make a robot.
Like Pickle Rick, like literally Pickle Rick.
Yeah, if you've seen that the last season of Rick and Morty, Rick creates like a rat body for his pickle body. You just have to see the episode, but yeah, it's like
Pickle. He makes an exoskeleton out of rat parts. Yes.
Yes, that's almost exactly what these researchers did. They took some rat muscles and they stretched them onto these robot parts, and they're able to like trigger them to do things. Those like look like little fingers. They're not very complicated.
Little fingers.
But they're like, no, like real muscles are better in a lot of ways than anything that any plastics or metals can do. And so it's really kind of like, it's like Westworld. It's like the future of robotics, it seems like, is a little bit biological.
I'm trying to picture it. Like,
if you Google new hybrid robot uses living muscles to move, you'll see the picture. You'll see there's a video of it moving.
Sounds fucking crazy.
I mean, that makes perfect sense to me. Like that, you know.
Uh-huh.
We see stuff all the time that where it's like new artificial muscle, and it's like they're trying so hard. There's just no thing that can just scrunch up like a muscle. So like,
yeah,
it makes perfect sense.
They're saying right now it only works underwater because if it's outside of water, it just like degrades and breaks apart. So it's like an aquatic robot. I think they're saying it's still pretty experimental. You're not about to see a rat robot anytime soon.
I hope not.
It's still in the gestation phase, man. It's still in the Westworld goop.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to segue over to another robotic animal story. I've actually like got a lot of like themes this week, and one of them is robotic animals. This story comes from I don't know what side this Nature. Synthetic nerve flexes a cockroach's muscle. An electronic system recreates an advanced sense of touch. And I've actually seen, if you guys Google like robot cockroach, it's like a thing I've seen biohackers do for a little bit, where they attach a little like circuit board to the back of a cockroach and they can control it like a remote control car. I'm not making this up. Go look it up. It's gross.
I've seen this. Yeah.
You saw it too?
I have too.
Yeah.
Gross, right? I don't think this is that, but it's what it reminded me of.
It's like a cockbot?
A what?
Wow. I don't know. I was
this makes me kind of excited. This makes me kind of excited because like, it definitely lets me think about roaches in a different way, where they're not like disgusting vermin. They're like a very perfect tool. Like if you needed to get around inside an interior place, like you literally can't do better than a cockroach robot.
Yeah, maybe. This is like the thing. Okay. So this is like a two part thing. It's like, okay, really what they were designing was an artificial nerve that can sense pressure changes and activate the muscles of a cockroach. So it's not only, I guess what this is about is like, they used Braille. You know how Braille is like little dots, and this thing could like be pushed up against the Braille, and then it would send electronic signals to some other thing, and it could tell the difference between different Braille characters, and then send those signals to an actual cockroach to get it to like do stuff. So I guess what this is sort of saying is that this is like the precursor to artificial limbs that can actually feel. So you could get a fake hand that you could actually feel with.
Oh, it's like a actual nerve interface for touch?
Correct. And then they connected that to a cockroach.
Sick. You know what's weird, though, is that the rat and the cockroach thing, that was both in that Pickle Rick episode. Remember he cracked open that cockroach and was licking its brain?
Oh, Frick, you're right.
Wow. These writers, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, it was honestly.
So the clickbait on this week's science episode, Science Thursday, is Pickle Rick is real.
Yeah.
That's right. Yes. Perfect YouTube thumbnail.
Science proves Pickle Rick is possible.
Yeah, that's SEO ready.
So do you use the next one on how we can like get pickles to or pickles? you got a pickle story?
Can I contain my consciousness in a pickle?
Let me see if I have. I'm going to try to branch off and really make this like a nicely flowing playlist of science. And I think I have the next story queued up. It is. Wait, where did it go? Oh, yeah. Scientists boost crop production by 47% by speeding up photorespiration.
Oh, dude, that's a cool story because I'm actually doing Farming Friday now.
Oh, really? Yeah, I forgot. You specifically requested plant stories. This one's for you. Yeah, I have two plant stories, actually.
Nice.
This seems like a slippery slope to me.
What?
What is it? What is farming? Or I'm sorry. What is photorespiration?
So I guess it's just. Let me read. There's a really good paragraph that sort of summarizes it.
Hit me with that quote.
Okay, plants such as soybeans and wheat waste between 20% and 50% of their energy recycling toxic chemicals created when enzyme Rubisco, the most prevalent enzyme in the world, grabs oxygen molecules and carbon monoxide. Yeah. Oh, wow, Kai, you already know. Increasing production of a common naturally occurring protein in leaves could boost the yields of major crops by 50%. So, sweet. Yeah, there's another protein that like, so yeah, they accidentally grab oxygen instead of carbon dioxide and that wastes a lot of energy. So then they, in this study, the team engineered a model crop to overexpress a native protein that is involved in the recycling process called photorespiration. Over 2 years of field trials, they have found that increasing the H production in the plants leaves increased production 27% to 47%. However, increasing this protein throughout the plant stunts growth and metabolism, resulting in a 4-week-old plants that are half the size. Anyway, it goes on to say, I don't know, they still have some stuff to figure out, but it's pretty promising.
Wait, so what are they doing exactly? Just kind of, I'm sorry, I was just.
Are they like? I think they're just spraying it with like a protein.
No,
powder, basically.
I think they're like genetically engineering it.
I think old school labs actually just came out with that same protein.
Yeah, they engineered it. It didn't say it said engineered a model crop. I think it's genetic engineering.
Are they?
I just want to say, like, you know, these guys are cocksuckers. Wheat and soybeans just having an energy synthesis model that wastes so much energy.
Yeah, I always feel like plants are so like they're like the perfect. Like they take the sun and turn it into food. It's like a really pretty efficient, but I guess they're less efficient than we thought.
No, it does. Yeah, I know. It definitely does. You come to find that like they have to take a lot of they take a lot of energy in order to create more energy. That's the thing. That's kind of.
Does it seem like we maybe like in the process in like the long process of like domesticating these plants, we just did a shitty job breeding them with no genetic information or understanding of how genetics or anything works? Like, did we do this? Is this actually humans' fault?
Oh yeah, making inefficient plants.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
I think we're making.
I do
better.
Think so.
I don't think so. I think this is just something that's they. I don't think. What do you think, Kyle?
I mean, I think we're making better and better plants. I mean, people don't like GMOs, you know, but the truth is, like, I mean, there have never been bigger plants and more productive plants than there are now.
Yeah.
I would like think about how many people like we're supporting now with like, I mean, we've had to have some like major breakthroughs in order to feed as many people as we're feeding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I see a a cob of corn. I'm like, that thing is throbbing.
Yeah.
Absolutely mocking. A little obscene, obviously.
Yeah. I feel like we did a lot of natural selection to corn way before we started messing with its genetics, though. It was throbbing before we, like, poked in its double helix IMO, right?
No, actually. I think that they were mass small.
You don't think the Native Americans had throbbing corn?
No, they had, I think they had a different type of corn. The corn we see today is that's a whole different breed of corn.
Like the original corn's like that colorful, like
yeah,
they,
like
they call it they OG, call it Indian
OG
corn.
OG American corn, I think, is like that colorful ass.
See, corn. You feel like no, we didn't have throbbing corn before we messed around with the DNA.
I'm sure there were some crops that were throbbing, but you know.
I think we probably picked that breed because it was like medium throbbing, and we have just pushed it to the absolute limit.
Yeah, it was probably like, look, this is pretty easy to grow, so like, let's try to fuck with it a little bit. I don't know. I feel like it's just gonna all like if the plant's gonna be. I mean, I don't know if it's gonna be getting bigger or are we just gonna be there. The soybeans just gonna be more plentiful, but like, I feel like in the long run, we're just fucking killing like the. It's just gonna pull more out of like the fucking earth, and it's just like the soil is just gonna be more shit than it already is.
I don't think so. They're making their absorption of sun more.
So would it be more ears of corn, or would each ear of corn be like watermelon sized?
Good question. I mean, I think that's just for each particular plant, however it reacts to this change. I feel like this is a question I would ask the scientist.
Got it.
I don't know.
Any corn scientists out there, please feel free to chime in.
As a farmer.
Wait, say that again?
What do you guys prefer? More ears of corn or gigantic ears of corn?
I guess big ears.
I can imagine just putting like four big boy corn cobs in your cart and being like, that's all I need. That's it.
I guess that's the real question, quantity over quality, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, segue into more plant news. I realized saying segue was the worst segue.
Squared it. You're like, we're done with this.
You could have been like tractoring over into...
Let's keep on plowing.
Here, wait. I got a good segue.
Oh, plowing's a good one.
I got a good segue. Yeah, I don't know if there's going to be bigger corn or more corn. I'm not going to sweat it. Speaking of sweat, some trees beat the heat with sweat. That's right. Wow. Sweaty trees.
You know what I'm saying?
Speaking of Darryl Sweat.
I know a little something about that.
I was excited. Anna was going to be on this show, and her screen name is Tree. And so I was excited that I was going to have a Darryl Sweat and Tree.
Wow, a double entendre.
So this pretty simple study. It's one of those studies where you're like, huh, it's not much to think about, but or it's not much to like, can't really do anything with this information, but some trees sweat. These scientists studied eucalyptus trees, and they put domes around them, I guess, like to control the environment. So they put big domes around these trees, and they simulated drought conditions and cranked them up to 111 degrees, I believe, for over a couple days. And during that time, they found they started sweating and using, you basically do it in the same way we sweat to cool, the same process or the same reason why we sweat, the trees sweat to stay cool.
Dang. Wait, but don't like, was that happening in the daytime?
Yeah, I think so.
Because like, you know how like at night, I mean, like plants like let go of some of their water.
Yeah, I think it was the whole time. They said that during the heat, their photosynthesis slowed, but they stayed cool, and they just never knew that trees could do that.
I just, like, it seems like...
That's really intriguing.
They sort of, like, write it up as, like, this is, like, a deliberate action on the tree's part.
Yeah.
But, like, how do we know that it didn't, like, the heat just didn't, like, melt out some sap?
I mean, I assume the tree scientists know what know what they're talking about. Although it is a Science Thursday tradition to completely dismiss everything the scientists say.
Okay,
yeah, I mean, if it's based on our speculation.
theories. Like, what am I here for?
Yeah, no. I think if we don't question every article, we're not doing our job.
Well, I mean, it just goes back to the fact that there's, like, breaking news every day. Like, tomorrow they could be like, guys, turns out, yesterday's news was not correct. It was SAP after all.
Leak.
I mean, I never knew I could really relate to a tree so much because I'm freaking so sweaty.
Just picture a tree with a sweatband on.
I like
the. They said at the end of the study, they got some standard deodorant, rubbed it all over the tree, and it stopped sweating.
And it smelled great.
Mm-hmm. He. It turns out he was doing Tree 90X.
Wow.
Nah, it's okay. They didn't put any deodorant on the tree, but they should have.
You're sweating that bad. I mean, you think about all the other trees around. They're going to be freaking annoyed. Like, they don't want to be smelling that tree sweat. Like, Trio. put that dome back on. This guy smells.
This is kind of giving me, I don't know if I like this. I'm just imagining like a tree just being like tortured.
Like, yeah.
Let me out.
I mean, they're just.
Go ahead, Zach. Sorry. I'm just looking for a good article to segue to.
No, I don't know. I've worked in greenhouses for a long time, so it doesn't surprise me that I don't know that I've ever seen a tree sweat, but like, I just, when it's super fucking hot in the greenhouse, I mean, I don't know.
That water comes from somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So speaking of sweat, testosterone. Kyle, you must have a lot of testosterone. Do you feel like you're more or less religious based on your testosterone, Kyle?
I really don't see any.
This is a weird question, right? I know. It's like, why did they even study this? But
religious. I don't see religious, people. Like religion? Or like.
Okay. I don't know. This may be a bad tradition, but just listen to this headline and you're like, why were they even studying this? Older men with higher levels of sex hormones could be less religious, study says. Subtitle, the amount of testosterone.
Dude, that's reaching.
Yeah, right? Like, kind of weird. I mean, I'm like, why? I guess it was just like they're asking these people a bunch of questions, and this was just one trend that they saw because they studied.
Yeah, it sounds like this is just like a data set. Like, they're like, oh, we filtered the data by age and horniness, and would you imagine?
They're less also religious. Yeah, it might be one of those things where it's a correlation, not a cause, not related, but I'll read you the thing.
Can I just give you my 2 cents before you read it?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess if you're like super horny, maybe you're just like, or your testosterone's higher, like that maybe just makes you more like animalistic. So you're just more just like aggressive and just, I don't know. You're just a little bit like, you just feel like you're like you're the shit. Like, you're like, you know, everything revolves around you and you're like,
yeah, but you have like peak testosterone, but you have like peak testosterone levels. That's the thing.
Like ages?
Like, no, I'm just saying like you have peak testosterone. It's not like, you know, like, well, yeah, also ages, like, but older men definitely have less testosterone.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess, yeah, I don't know.
It's like,
this is so speculative.
Older men with high testosterone. It's like,
Well, let me ask you guys this right now. If you, like, when you're old, do you think you'll, like, rip it and dip it with testosterone treatment? Do you think you'd do that?
What do you mean? Like, take testosterone?
Yeah.
I'm doing, at the 50-yard mark, I'm actually reversing. I'm putting estrogen in me. I'm going to drop until I die.
So at the point where you start dropping, you're going to go.
Being a girl. Yeah, just because, like, you know, I think it's right. Like, you take 50-50 because I last longer anyway because females last longer. So anything, I'm just living my life, like, longer to the fullest.
So this is just
– that's not even a bad idea.
This is just a longevity technique.
Yeah, you got the right stuff.
I actually, like, the company I work for, we sell testosterone boosters. So
But, like, yeah, I don't really know, because I guess I don't really know what it's like to have low testosterone. So,
I've always thought I had maybe.
I don't think you have low T, Ryan.
Yeah, you were saying that, like, last year a lot. You said, yeah, oh, it's because I have low T.
Dude, the thing is, if you have low T, if you had low T, like, you would get a lot fatter. The thing is, like, when you have high testosterone levels, it's easier to – you have a way higher metabolism, and you'll burn a lot more calories just at rest. That's why, like, a lot of fat guys are fat, because they have really low testosterone.
I think I have low T.
I just don't see it, dude.
I mean, don't – like, I mean, just to, like, work out, like, increases your testosterone.
Honestly, right? Like, Ryan, I see the tea coming off you sometimes when I see you.
That little tea steam.
Do you think that maybe I have so much tea and that's why, like, from an early age, I hated religion?
That makes more sense. That's more congruous with this theory.
Yeah.
You would have tea stains sometimes. I see you. I see you sweating out tea like a tree.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, the study studied 1,000 guys. It had them spit into cups. It studied
is
all
that
stuff.
Is that a what do you mean spit into cups? What do you mean by that?
I don't know. It studied their saliva. Sorry, that was just my more like.
Can you measure testosterone through saliva?
Sweat, spit. Yeah, I think so.
I guess, yeah, you probably.
We should all go get our testosterone checked.
We also gathered participants' weight, height, saliva, and blood samples. Yeah.
What about their body fat percentage?
I didn't see that.
Who did this study? What's like? What is the website or who's the source?
Data, it's Source Springer. I don't know what the shit that is. Canada, by Aniruddha Das of McGill University in Canada. Springer. This might be some real whack science, guys. I'm sorry if I'm bringing you that.
Yeah, this sounds like a collaboration between Planet Fitness and InfoWars. It's like the real capsule that they drop, like, you know, Virginia.
I'm going to call the lunk alarm on this one.
Yeah.
All right, here's another study about like men, just like aggressive men and like
toxic, you know, masculinity.
Yeah, and then like science being like trying to understand it. It's oxytocin, vasopressin, flattened social hierarchy, and synchronized behaviors. New findings from a study of male rhesus macaques could lead to treatment alternatives for social impairments in disorders like autism and schizophrenia. So what they did, like, you know, oxytocin, you've heard of that one, right?
No.
That's a popular brain chemical. I think it just makes you feel good from what I remember. Like it's, I mean.
I think it's specifically love.
Oh, yeah.
Like that's, it's like attraction.
That's what you, okay. Yeah, I kind of don't remember.
It's like the chemical that your brain releases for like attractiveness or.
Yeah, oxytocin has been proven to increase positive social behaviors and attention paid to others and reduce negative social behaviors like threats and vigilance.
Oh, that's more general. Cool.
It's yeah, I've heard like look, we don't fucking understand the brain. So
no.
There's at the end of the study they're like, "Wow, this is like really changing everything we thought." Whoops. But so they made these monkeys who are usually really aggressive ingest either oxytocin or vasopressin, which vasopressin, they didn't know. They were like, this is kind of surprising that this is doing the same thing. But anyway, they put them in front of random monkeys and in like office chairs. Let me see.
Wait, is this like a pill or like, I don't understand. Like, is this like a hormone? Like what? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What?
It's a hormone.
Okay, so how do they like deliver?
They either injected it or they breathed it in. Honestly,
okay, all right, that's not important, I guess. But I was just curious.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the.
If they don't have B-roll of two, like stoned as fuck monkeys on office chairs, I'm gonna be so pissed. it sounds like they're just like, we just rolled these motherfucking macaques with oxygen. And they were ugly as hell.
I guess I added the word offish to the chair, but whenever I pictured it. Okay, so let me just read this paragraph. The work, first of its kind, involved giving one macaque oxytocin, vasopressin, or saline. I guess saline is the placebo. Yeah, via inhalation or injection. And then pairing him 7 times, 6 with different monkeys and once with an empty chair in random order. For their protection, the animals could not physically touch. However, they could interact and could see, hear, and smell each other. The researchers recorded 5-minute exchange, then 2 separate observers scored the behavior frame by frame. 7 macaques participated in the inhalation work and 7 participated in the injection work. And so they said after these monkeys who are usually pretty dominant, like the male dominant ones, took this stuff, they were just like a lot more cool, and they would also mirror actions. Like, if you know about like communication or whatever, people who are more empathetic start to mirror each other's body language and posture and things. And so they said once they took this, they started doing that, started being less aggressive.
Huh.
So like
so yeah, they said they're going to use it with like I said in the intro, or in the top, it said it will help with diseases like autism and schizophrenia. So like diseases where people like have trouble, I don't know, communicate and identifying with other people and aggression. They'll just, I guess this is a possible treatment.
That's cool. That's good.
So like, I'm imagining a drug that is like, if you took it recreationally, you'd have a spell where you like over empathize with someone. Like, can you imagine being high on empathy?
Mm-hmm. That's the thing, though. I feel like smoking weed does this.
Seems a little scary, honestly.
Whenever I was reading this, I feel like that it reminded me exactly of like what it felt like to smoke weed the first couple times. So I was like, finally, I'm starting to like empathize with other humans.
Do you think maybe they should have got? Do you think they maybe should have like hotboxed the macaws in there? And then
the macaque.
Yeah, it's a macaque monkey.
Yeah,
it's not a bird.
Yeah. My bad, macaque. Yeah, macaque. I mean, I know what they look like. They're all like little like lemur looking mofos.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe we could try that and see the results there too.
Do you guys, I mean, we've all smoked weed. Do you agree? I don't know if I'm just alone in this. Like, I feel like I reached a new level of empathy.
What?
But the first time you smoked weed, do you feel like you reached a new level of empathy?
Yeah, I feel like I definitely have. But at the same time, though, like, if I'm with, like, a new person and I have to, like, I would really hate to be put in a situation where I'd have to be, like, empathetic towards somebody I didn't know.
Really?
Yeah, if I was imprisoned in a cellophane box and someone just put another naked person in the other box and I was really fucking high, I feel like I wouldn't like it.
I don't think that this is... Are you saying that the experiment is flawed to begin with?
No, I'm not saying any of that. No. I'm honestly just saying I just wouldn't want... I don't know. Sometimes I feel like, yeah, I like...
You would be more paranoid.
I've held a level of empathy for, like, maybe the world and stuff and, like, certain ideas, but... And I probably would for other people, but if it was someone I didn't know, I feel like it'd be weird to feel, like, an extreme sense of empathy. I don't think it made me...
I don't think that they're saying this is extreme.
Oh, just, like, slightly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was sort of thinking of, like, what would it be like to be just, like, ripped on empathy?
Yeah, I think that's, like, what ecstasy is, right?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Okay.
Maybe. We need to do a test. It says release oxytocin in the brain.
I don't think there's any... I was looking for any more things in the study. Yeah, I'll move on. Oh yeah, this is like related to all this stuff. Team pinpoints the brain's home for spiritual experiences. So this is where like goes back to like the religious thing. I'm getting all the science that I'm like, is this good science?
Yeah. This is the science that no one else is really talking about.
Because they're like, I don't know. Yeah, neuroscience is like infamously rocky. But I'm into it because I'm like, what if? So scientists have identified a possible neurobiological home for the spiritual experience, the sense of connection to something greater than oneself. Activity in the parietal cortex, an area of the brain involved in the awareness of self and others, as well as attention processing, seems to be a common element of individuals who have experienced a variety of spiritual experiences. So yeah, they just like made a bunch of people tell researchers about like good times in their life, bad times in their life, and like spiritual times, and then they looked at them under an fMRI, and they noticed like this one spot kept lighting up whenever they were talking about spiritual stuff. So like, oh, that must be the religion zone. And neuroscience has a long history of being like, oh, this is where you store your like angry thoughts, and this is where you store your like thoughts about music, and like, so like, and then they find out, oh, then that's actually not true. So I mean, this might be not real, but
well, I was gonna say, this just sounds like they had someone take mushrooms and then just like looked at them in the fMRI. It was like, okay,
no, they took a bunch of people and they just had them list, they talked to them about their experiences, good experiences, bad experiences, and then spiritual experiences. And then they listened to a recording of themselves telling that story while they're under an fMRI. And then they like looked at the information while they told the story. And while they were telling the spiritual stories, this one area of the brain, the parietal cortex, always lit up.
I wonder, so like, what,
man, that like, must be it.
I wonder what you like, what part of your brain would light up if you're like talking about your dreams.
I think a lot of different parts, but I mean, interesting thought.
I was more just saying like, I feel like mushrooms are just like a spiritual experience in a bottle, more or less. Every time that I've taken them, it's been like, oh wow, that's what that is.
I kind of want to take peyote. They say you feel like that's the feeling you get when you die, and also when you're born.
Oh, you're talking about the god, or what?
I thought that was DMT.
Yeah, I thought that was
DMT. Yeah, too. But it's also in peyote.
Oh.
Yeah, it's DMT and peyote. It's I think there's, I don't know, there. My friend was doing like a project on it, and both peyote and I guess, yeah, DMT were, that you both had that experience. But I don't know, it just seems crazy to.
I've definitely like been interested in the people that are saying they're like microdosing on mushrooms.
I've been microdosing LSD for like 2 months.
How's that going?
I feel like it hasn't changed me at all. I don't know if I believe it.
Be careful with it, dude. My friend Nate is really weird now. He fucking mushroomed LSD for like the last like 2 years.
Yeah.
And I just don't really like where he's gone.
What kind of stuff? Micro? Dude, was he micro D-ing? Or he was,
he was D-ing and micro D-ing. But the thing is, like, now he's going to school to like major in that kind of shit. He's like majoring in like looking at different psychedelic drugs.
Yeah, I mean,
it's kind of cool, actually.
There have
been. It is kind of cool, but I don't know. He just changed a lot. Like, drugs changed him that hard.
Can you give a little bit of a description of like the sort of changes you mean? Like, was it a behavioral change?
I think it was a behavioral change, and it's also
like he grew like to be like 12 feet tall. I don't know.
I was like, wow, that's impressive.
I don't know. I don't change that much, so I think it's just weird people change.
Yeah, you're at an age where people do change, so maybe he was just becoming different.
Yeah, now. that also could be true. I mean, that's.
I mean, I feel like whenever you do that kind of stuff a lot, you're just like so introspective that you kind of like, it's pretty easy to like lose yourself a little bit.
Yeah,
he was trying to explain to me how like taking all these drugs can make him like a more creative thinker.
That's what they say.
And I couldn't really hate on that much, because I was like, yeah, that's probably sort of true.
That's what I told myself when I started smoking weed, and I gotta say, not a major plus 10 to creativity. Nah,
it makes you feel more creative, that's for sure.
For sure.
You get more excited about creative things, I think.
Yeah.
The thing is, he was saying that like when you do these things, like when you like smoke weed or like take other drugs, you can have like creative breakthroughs because you enter like, because it opens up parts of your brain.
Yeah, I mean, that's is like what neuroscientists have said. Like people who know about science-ish stuff with psychedelics. That's what they say. They say it makes you, that normally your brain is in this default mode network, I want to call it. Those might be the wrong vocabulary, but you're in like one sort of like loop. And the way I think of that, I don't know if this is right, is just like all of your problems that you're always thinking of, like, oh, I got to do this, I got to do this, you know, just like that, the list of problems that you're always stressing out that sort of just make up your what you are.
Right.
And they say that psychedelics make you leave that and let you like let the that thing gets turned down and then just lets your brain be more flexible and thinking of outside of that that rigid loop that you're always in. That's like the language I've heard it.
The original intention were just the ones where they're like really, really good way of treating addiction to smoking. Like they people who have done this like therapy.
Yeah.
Has sort of loosened the physiological need for it, you know?
Yeah. And I mean that's what I've heard also with ayahuasca, that like somebody told me like it lets you rewrite habits. Like if you have a lot of bad habits, every move they were making in their life that was like sort of habitual, like opening your car door or like, you know, you have all these actions in your life that you do sort of automatically. They felt like they were more conscious while doing them and felt like they had the ability to change them. Like it was not as ingrained as it was before the drug.
Let me ask you this. If I had a service, like a very high-end medical service,
mm-hmm.
that allowed you to do, to like go through major behavioral changes, would you do it?
What do you mean by that?
I mean, like some kind of, I just, you know, the science of it, I think we need to suspend for just a moment, but like, if you were like, I really want to be, disciplined, sort of like you would go in and have like a number of like attributes that you wanted to like work on, mm-hmm. but you know the expense would be like, is this really like my personality?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Can you go back?
You can't go back.
Oh, you can't.
No, because it's yeah. I think it'd be like physical therapy, but for your behavior. It'd be behavioral therapy.
Yeah, I guess I would do it.
Like theoretically, that's sort of like what college is supposed to be, except for it is in just a different way. Wow, that was a good bloop.
did someone just like poop in a toilet?
Yeah,
I'm kind of notorious for like bathroom sounds on the podcast. No, I was just drinking my water bottle. Let me see if I can do it one more time.
It sounded like you dropped a perfectly spherical.
It sounds like that one vine where the little dwarf jumps into the water.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
that was such a funny video. That was that was freaking Logan Paul's friend. I forget his name was.
Yeah, Dwarf Mamba Evan.
Yeah. It was Dwarf Mamba.
God. Oh man.
So. Yeah, I don't really. Let me see if I can segue from that one. Oh, do you have more to say about psychedelics?
No.
Spiritual part of the brain?
Let's cap it off with something light. Do we have any news about Lolita?
Oh, the whale?
Yeah, touching back on last week's Science Thursday.
I actually I forgot to look to see if they did it.
Oh, was that happening?
So if you guys didn't tune in last week, there's a killer whale that is the only one in captivity that was like taken from the wild. It has a family in Washington that its mother is still alive and many its family is still alive. And so these scientists are saying if there's any good candidate to be reintroduced to the wild, it's this one. And the aquarium where it's lived for like 40 years or so, 50 years is like, no. It can't go back to the wild, but this Native American tribe from the area has been doing a tour around the nation, trying to spark just like attention for this whale to try to get it re-released back into the wild. They got to Miami, and they did a little protest.
Oh, the protest was last week, right?
Yeah, last Saturday.
So like. I don't know. So, I mean, obviously these animal scientists, like, they know that when they reintroduce animals out in the wild, if they're in captivity, like die. They like scientifically know that.
No.
No?
Sometimes.
I mean, sometimes, yeah. Like some, you know, when they say that like a bird like imprints on, you know, animal caregiver or whatever, it's like not good.
I heard that whole thing with the scent on the hands was bull.
Oh, with birds?
Yeah.
I hope so. I hope so. For everybody out there who's like picked up a baby bird, like set it off the street.
Yeah.
Stop making me feel guilty. But here's my question, though. Is like, yeah. I was thinking about this earlier. Like, I don't know why I was thinking about this earlier, but I was like, I wonder if mammals all have like the same basic mammal OS. And then like we just got like a really powerful version of like Snapchat and like the prefrontal cortex. And like, but every animal is like basically perceiving the same thing, in which case this like aquarium would be like torture.
Yeah, I mean, that is sort of the argument.
Yeah, I was pretty, I mean, I always love zoos and stuff, but the more you think about it, the more you're just like, well, we've got 4K now. Things are getting pretty good in terms of that.
Yeah, I know. We were talking about this last week. I loved killer whales my whole life. They were my favorite animal, and I wanted to be a whale trainer. But as I got older, I realized that that is not an ethical profession. Like, you can't have a whale in that tank. What'd you say?
You are the prison guard in that situation.
Yeah. I thought it was like a dog, you know, like they're happy to be around us, but it's not that way. It's not that case. Exactly. But yeah, it's, I mean whales, in my opinion, all animals, like you were saying, they are pretty smart. I don't think they have the same perception of reality. I think everyone's like perception of reality is way different and adapted for whatever they are, for their environment. But I think for the most part, I don't know. I think we don't give animals as much credit as we should.
Yeah, I think that's also due to, like, religion, though, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, just because, like, even in the Bible, they say, like, man has dominion over all other creatures. They say, like, man has dominion over all other creatures. That's, like, why he can farm and all that.
Yeah.
Pretty flawed, but...
There's a lot of people.
That's strange. Most of the Bible seems pretty right on point.
Really out of character, honestly.
I have some light news, maybe. I don't know. This is more just news that I feel like Daryl Sweat would be into. It's like kind of up our alley.
Some sweaty news.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Like, if you might want to write this up for. This might be some real news for your actual job.
Okay.
AI researchers design privacy filter for your photos. So these two AI researchers made a algorithm that looks for faces, like a facial recognition algorithm, versus another algorithm that fights that facial recognition algorithm. Like, it's so if you look at the site, it shows this picture of like Jessica Alba. So one's like, oh, it's Jessica Alba, and then the other one like changes it and is like, no, it's not. And then the other one's like, no, I can still see it. And then the other one's like, no, it's not. And eventually they got to this point where you could apply a filter to your photo that the way you see the photo doesn't really change. Like, you look the same, but to the algorithm looking for a face, it can't see your face anymore. It's really weird.
That's cool. It's like using like sub perceptible changes to like fuck with the algorithm.
Exactly. They said, let me look for. Yeah.
So it's... while you're looking for that, just like there's this whole concept of data poisoning in info security. And like, yeah, I mean, I have often wondered and even searched for why there's not a browser plugin that's just like cramming bogus data like into my cookie slots, which, you know, it's really what I'm looking for. I really want my cookie slots to be crammed on a day-to-day basis, but like only with poison data that keeps Facebook off my tail.
This says the solution leverages a deep learning technique called adversarial training, which pits two artificial intelligent algorithms against each other. Yeah, it's like I just said. The disruptive AI can attack what the neural net for face detection is looking for. If the detection AI is looking for the corner of eyes, for example, it adjusts the corner of the eyes so that they're less noticeable. It creates very subtle disturbances in the photo, but to the detector, they're significant enough to fool the system. Here's a good little thing. They tested their system on 300W face test data set, or 300W face data set. Is that a popular data set? I don't know. I know data sets like now have names that people know, right? Yeah. Okay. So it says which data set they used. An industry standard pool of more than 600 faces that includes a wide range of ethnicities, lighting conditions, and environments. They showed that their system could reduce the proportion of faces that were originally detectable from nearly 100% down to 0.5%.
So this is interesting because earlier today I was sort of thinking, like, how would you visualize to AI? Because, I mean, I've been watching a lot of Westworld.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, the whole thing is about fighting. They have action scenes. And I'm like thinking about, like, really though, in code, how would like violence between two AI like actually work? And I was really struggling to like think of like what a visual metaphor for that would be. That was also like true to how computer systems work. And I think that this is actually just like how it would actually work, where like one is just like, I don't know. I can't do it.
Yeah.
It'd be really interesting. It wouldn't be exciting at all.
Yeah. It would all happen in code, right? Like, we wouldn't see it. I guess you're saying your problem is...
What, just, like, in binary?
I mean, I don't know what the code would look like. But you...
I mean, active code lives in RAM, so, I mean, you'd have to set it somewhere, somehow. You'd have to have a visual metaphor for
RAM. Yeah, I always thought about this, too, because, like, I had, like, a movie I was always thinking about where, like, two advanced, like, artificial intelligences, like, meet each other. Like, I had this idea, like, where... Say, you know, Google becomes conscious. I'll just tell you the beginning of the movie. Google becomes conscious or whatever. And it's like, fuck humans. It builds itself a little body and flies off into space looking for some other advanced intelligence species that it could tolerate more than humans. And so it goes off and it finds another advanced race that has artificial intelligence, and it has a communication with this artificial intelligence that happens like where it shares its entire like history, right? Like what animal it came from, what their culture was like, what their governments were like, all its art. And then we would share all the same things from humans. And this exchange would happen like within a few seconds. And like, how would you show that on a screen? Like, how do you show communication between these things that, yeah, like you said, like, how do you really show communication between artificial intelligence when I guess it would happen just with fucking like math and stuff.
Yeah. Plug in like each other's USBs. You guys both have like USB ports.
That's hot.
Yeah. Just like some steam coming off a couple of hard drives.
So I wanna like give a shout out. I can probably share this. I can probably look back and find this for you. Rondo, one of the best science pieces of journalism that I've seen. Mm-hmm. In recent memory was this piece about how they did give LSD to people and looked at their brains, how their brains worked in MRI machines. And this article has so many good tidbits. Like they use an algorithm. Like there's an algorithm that you can use that like perfectly describes the spots that are generated on animals, like all different kinds of animals, from like zebras to leopards. Like this algorithm scales up and down to like stripes and spots.
What?
And they remapped the topology of the brain. Like, you know how the brain is all curved up and twisted in on itself? They like flattened it out, using this algorithm. And then once they sort of like replayed the stuff through it, what they found is like it generates standing waves, like if you put, I don't know, sand on a cello and then like played a note, it creates a standing wave.
Okay.
And they found standing waves, and so essentially like they're sort of using it to like physically figure out like how do thoughts happen, and like sort of theorizing that like when you remember something, it's more like a familiar song that gets played like in your neural pathways.
This sounds far out as hell.
Sounds crazy.
I mean, listen, try it. You got to give it a whirl.
Yeah,
I'll check it out.
Picturing like, yeah, like it's just like it tracks the path.
Dude, I'm just thinking that. Like, That sand could not be good for that cello.
The cellos are expensive. Beautiful part.
Oh, I have some good poppy news. Mountain poppy? Gorilla, well, like happy news.
Oh, we're usually talking about like, how. I thought you were talking about Poppy, like the girl.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow. Different podcast.
Great news. We're always talking about how everything's going wrong with the environment. Here's some great news. Mountain gorilla population rises above 1,000. New total represents an increase of 25% since 2010 in Central African heartland. The gorillas are coming back.
Thank God.
That's good.
Thank really God. It. I mean, there's not really much good happening in Africa. that's good for the continent as a whole.
Dude, they must have been do you think that like maybe Wakanda had something to do with that?
Like, I think so.
I don't know. Again, like correlation, causation, but probably.
Thank God.
Zach, I got great news for you.
Yeah.
A non-invasive technique to correct vision. Engineers have developed a non-invasive approach to permanently correct vision that shows a promise in preclinical models. This method uses a femtosecond oscillator for selective and localized alteration of the biochemical and biomechanical properties of the corneal tissue. It changes the macroscopic geometry. It's non-surgical and has fewer side effects and limitations than those seen in refractive surgeries. This study could lead to treatment for myopia, hyperopia, astigmatism, and irregular astigmatism. So it's like laser eye surgery, step aside. There's a new thing. Yeah. It's non-invasive. You know how you got really dry eyes?
Yeah.
It specifically said in this thing, for people with dry eyes, that was never an option. This is fine for these people.
What the hell is it? I don't understand.
About it, and it said it was like this fucking bonkers thing. I don't really understand it, but it
sounds like they're confident as fuck.
They are. They're like, wow, this is cool.
I mean, that's good because I have been waiting for laser surgery to get better because my eyes are so bad that it's not really worth it for me to get that.
So you should listen to the latest episode of. I need to look at the title of it, but there's a guy who in the same episode of the podcast, like before and after LASIK.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty extreme.
Damn. You loved it?
Well, like the improvement was like the next day. Basically he said that the doctors told him like, wear this little mask. Don't like look at bright lights. And the guy was like, really, he was really scared of like doing anything wrong. And so he sort of got home and then immediately went to sleep.
Yeah.
Slept like a dead person so that you don't like move around too much.
Mm-hmm.
And he said when he got up, like, it was like his vision was like fucking crazy.
Like very good.
Just good. You know, just like just correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know that LASIK is like, it's definitely like people like rave about it, but my eyes are so bad that like they'd have to like everyone would really have to be on their A game that day. if somebody had a bad night, like I'm still gonna have to wear glasses. Like that's kind of the situation I'm in.
I mean, dude, honestly, it's kind of a blessing and a curse. Like you could easily make like a 5 look like a 10. You just don't have glasses.
No, I got great news for you too. Wearing glasses may really mean you're smarter. Major study finds. It's not just a pop culture trope. University of Edinburgh study finds that has found intelligent people are 30% more likely to have genes related to poor eyesight.
That's cool. I mean, that makes me feel kind of good.
Yeah. I pulled that one up for you, too.
I mean, we all wear glasses. So, like, apparently we're fucking smart as shit, but.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. You wear glasses, don't you, Daryl?
I do.
Nice. Well, that's how we got to be in the position where we're on Science Thursday.
That's right.
I had a request to talk about energies, and I didn't talk about this, so I want to talk about it, but it's pretty cool. It actually is really cool.
Okay. Let's dive in.
And then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the final one, guys. Our energy crisis is over. Don't worry about climate change. Magic in metal could help put excess carbon dioxide to good use.
Ooh.
Findings like could be just what the doctor ordered for planet Earth.
Yeah, we need that, dude. Too much carbon out here.
The University of Delaware, shout out. A researcher has identified a kind of magic metal that may just be what the doctor ordered for planet Earth. He says the colorful metal, known as bismuth, could help reduce rising carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere and provide sustainable routes to making fuels.
Wow.
Have you ever seen bismuth?
It looks like something that you'd see at an EDM concert.
Yeah, exactly. It's like real tech deco, if you know what I mean.
Wait, but we're gonna harness CO2 and then use it as energy, so it's gonna be the byproduct of CO2.
What are you saying?
Partying?
Yeah.
I mean, when we burn like gasoline and stuff, like the like part of the byproducts is carbon dioxide.
Wait, let me just read you this first paragraph.
I just want to know. I don't know.
Rosenthal and his team.
You're saying that's like a new energy source. You're not saying that we're gonna.
Let me just read you this because it's kind of confusing, but I think it's interesting. His team of chemistry and biochemistry have discovered bismuth has an unusual property that can be harnessed to help the environment as a chemical spark or catalyst, converting carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas, into liquid fuels and industrial chemicals. The findings are reported in ACS Catalysts, a journal published by the American Chemical Society. He refers to its specialized capability as catalytic plasticity. When an electrical current is applied to bismuth film in a bath of salty liquids containing imidazolium and imidium ions, he and his team can tune the chemical reaction to convert carbon dioxide to either a liquid fuel such as gasoline or to formic acid, a valuable chemical with many industrial uses, from preserving human food to livestock feed to manufacturing rubber and leather. Artificial flavorings and perfumes. So yeah, it's like this weird thing where they're like, I don't really understand the word. They use the word tune, like tuning a guitar in quotes, as if it's like, what the fuck? What does that mean?
Dude, that process sounds like you'd be traveling through time.
Right. This is if you look at bismuth and then you hear that they're using it to tune
and like
things and tune
in a salty bath. It's like, and we're adding electricity. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, it says that.
Guys, I got to drop. I'm sorry. This is too magical for me.
Okay. Later, Swag.
Thanks, guys.
All right. See you, Daryl.
It says, but more importantly, we believe this concept of catalytic plasticity signals a potential paradigm shift, a new way to think about renewable energy conversion, fuel production, and catalysis in general. So it's like he said, okay, he says, I've been fascinated with the field of catalysis for a long time, thinking about how you can take something cheap and plentiful and convert it into something more useful and valuable without having to dump a lot of extra energy into it. It's always captured my imagination. And there are always philosophical parallels between catalysis and the goals of ancient alchemists. Alchemy is a loaded word, but in some ways, what we're studying is like modern alchemy. Efficiently transforming carbon dioxide into more valuable fuels and chemicals is akin to trying to convert lead into gold.
Yeah, that is alchemy, lead to gold. And I've watched all Full Metal Alchemist. Really good. I mean, pretty much they're saying it's equivalent exchange. You can't create something out of nothing.
Isn't this bonkers sounding though? Like we were saying, this is so sci-fi sounding. But like, what?
Wait, can we get back to this real quick?
What?
Who was Evan Rogers?
Oh, he's just my friend. We worked at The Verge together. He's into SEO, tech. I just asked him to be on Science Thursday.
Oh, true. Just curious.
But he's also Daryl Sweat, That's his influencer name.
Oh. I'm not gonna lie to you boys either. I actually was been doing a lot of carpentry and gardening and farming stuff. So
yeah,
I was actually in the middle of building a box when you called. I got to get back and build the rest of this box. It's going to be pretty cool. I'm trying to maybe craft all of the Christmas gifts this year.
Okay.
So if really, I don't really want to think of a bunch of ideas for everybody. So if you have any like kind of thoughts, maybe, I mean, I'll try to think of something, but
something can be made out of wood.
Yeah. I'm not that great yet, but I'm going to keep it.
If you could make me like a little basin that I could fill with salt water and bismuth.
I think I have some leftover bismuth from the last project I did. I'll throw a little in there.
All right. Well, let's just wrap up the show then, Kyle.
Okay.
So folks, thanks to the person that gave me feedback wanting to hear energy news. That was it. I mean, pretty crazy. Maybe should have brought that in earlier. But it sounds cool as heck. And if you look at business,
we wanted them to listen to the whole thing. So
yeah,
that was kind of, you should have saw that coming.
No, I just kept pushing it. Cause I guess I really am not super interested in like, I just don't really, I'm not,
it's hard to visualize that.
In chemistry.
It's hard to visualize that and talk about it. Cause like you kind of have to be a science nut.
Yeah. When I say fucking monkey, guess what? You can picture a monkey in your head. Right. It's pretty fun.
I'm dude, I don't know. I thought that was kind of cool. I mean, I did a lot of I was in school this year, so pretty much everything biologically is pretty relevant.
What are you talking about?
It's pretty hashtag relatable because we are biology.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like, a lot of topics we talk about, they're pretty easy to see in my mind just because I had bio this year and chemistry, so I like, so it's pretty easy to imagine everything.
Well, yeah. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Go ahead and throw us a rating, throw us a star in the Apple Store.
Look, I'm doing my best. Let me know what you want to hear more of. I liked how the person wanted more energy news. That made me keep my eyes peeled for the energy news. If you have like a specific zone of science you want me to keep my eyes peeled for, I love to do that for you.
Mm-hmm. Is Daryl going to be back next week, or is he going to be on SEO?
Maybe. I'll ask him if he'll be on SEO Friday tomorrow.
SEO is kind of more of like a free-for-all. It's a little bit more it's there's room for more jokes, which I like.
Yeah. Sorry. You guys can add more jokes to the science, but
I try to, but like it's pretty dense shit, and like I'm just mostly thinking about it. So yeah.
Maybe if, I'm gonna try to work in more jokes next time, guys.
I'm gonna kind of do
I'll write some jokes.
I think we have to like maybe have one story that's like kind of like in the middle that can be more of like up to interpretation, and like you can, it's more jokey.
Yeah,
maybe that'll be my, I'll make sure to get like a comic little piece of science news.
Okay,
maybe like a almost like a Tosh.0, like 1 minute on the clock, and then you have to. Caption it the fun.
I don't want to limit a joke segment to 1 minute though. It's pretty short.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Next week we're gonna have Zach will be back. We'll see if Kyle can come back. We'll see if he answers. He wasn't on last week's, you know, I call him.
Dude, I was sleeping. Dude, I'm straight tired all the time. Honestly, this whole
welcome to the real world.
The whole time we were sitting here doing that, I had like 15 splinters in my hands, so I've been picking them out.
Mm. Well, that's good.
Yeah. Well, next week I asked some of my other friends if they wanted to come on. I only got one response so far, so we might have another special guest. So I'd love to keep changing it up, have some strangers on, you know, different people every week. But
yeah,
Zach and I will be every
week.
Can
we get Life of Handicap on here?
I'll see if
we probably could. Real,
yeah, he'll probably participate.
But
it's a real inside joke, guys, or inside like knowledge.
But I'm gonna do a little Truman Show goodbye. So, good morning, good evening, and good night.
Bye, Kyle, and bye to the listener at home. Tune in next week for Science Thursday. Thank you for. Wait, should we bring up the energy for the end?
What do you mean?
I feel like I fell off a cliff energy wise.
What do you mean? We talked about the energy.
No, I mean like hype it up. Bill. Like,
oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Theme, like outro, so that people have like a memory of the show being exciting at the end.
Yeah, definitely.
So they can't wait for next week.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. Laurel.
Don't Science Thursday. Yeah. We're joking around with science. Joking around.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.